Hey, it's Owen here again on the Fansmanship.com podcast. After game three of the NBA Finals, the Heat took a 2-1 lead, and I needed to talk to our resident NBA guy, Luke Johnson, about what it means for both Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, what it means for the series, and we kind of talked a little bit bigger picture about how LeBron has developed his game from being really great, but not always translating to winning. And now it seems like he's able to be really great and still grind out the wins. I guess it's a skill that Tiger Woods even had in his heyday, was that even when you don't have your best, you still end up with similar numbers and you still are able to kind of grind out the victories. So hope you enjoy here on the Fansmanship.com podcast on Fansmanship.com.
Luke, what's going on?
What's up, brother?
How you doing?
Good, man.
You've been off the grid for a few days.
Off the grid for a few days in Lambria.
What you been doing?
Dude, it was really awesome. I got to be part of it's called Camp Reach for the Stars, and it's for kids with cancer or kids who have had cancer or, you know, anything like that. So there were 16 families, and it's basically a two-day thing in Cambria, and we go to Pinderata, the actual area. It's not Pinderata that day, but they open up for us with the Lions Club, and that's on Saturday, so that was last Saturday. And we go to Camp Jaeger and have a great time with the kids, and so, yeah, it's a pretty special time.
Cool. So you got to go up to Cambria, and it's great that they have something like that in our community. I mean, you hear about camps like that. I mean, there's the I Miss Ranch for kids with cancer and other ones out there, but it's pretty cool that they have that in County.
Yeah, that's great. It is awesome.
So this whole NBA playoffs has been consisting of me not watching most of the games and you watching most of the games, but tonight's game, and it's Sunday night. Happy Father's Day to those of you who are fathers out there. Tonight's game was a little bit different. I got a chance to watch quite a bit of it, and Luke was on his way back from camp. So Luke, just when you saw the final score, 91-85 Heat, was it surprising? Was it kind of what you expected?
You know what? It was, because the Heat are 9-2 this postseason now at home. So, I mean, we all know that they're a very good home team.
Yeah.
When you have two superstars like LeBron and D-Wade, you know, it's always a fourth quarter ball game anyways. And then even Chris Bosh is healthy. He's starting to play well. So, you know, you got those big three against the Thunder's big three.
Right.
I mean, it's definitely always surprising when a team as good as the Thunder are up by 10. They're 64-54 with about 4 minutes left in the third, about 5 minutes left in the third, and pretty much in control. I think Fisher hit a three with a foul, and it really was looking grim there for Miami, but Miami feeds off their defense and off their home crowd. And in that fourth quarter, the Thunder had 7 big turnovers, and the Heat converted 5 of those for fast break points. I think 2 were and ones, 1 for D-Wade, 1 for LeBron. And
yeah,
as we all know, those are huge plays for two guys right now who I really think have a chip on their shoulder. I mean,
the thing that struck me about tonight's game was, like you said, some of the big plays that they were making. Early in the game, Wade looked totally out of balance, out of sync. He looked out of it, dude. And one thing that I really wanted to make sure to say is that, you know, in the second half, he looked a lot better, a lot more composed, a lot more together. I don't know if it was some adjustment that Spoelstra made or whether it was something that Wade just kind of finally figured it out. But the idea that that he really looked so much better in the second half than he did in the first was one that kind of struck me. The other thing is, and you've been saying it all along, you've been talking about LeBron's consistency, but it's, and at the end of the day, the numbers look consistent every single time, but the way he gets the numbers are, you know, impressive and have been a lot better, I feel like, in the finals. He was 11 of 23 tonight, 29 points, 14 rebounds, and only 3 assists. In a game that Miami, as a team, only shot, what'd you say, 38% from the field?
38%.
LeBron was 11 for 23, so almost 50%. and got his shot where his teammates weren't shooting the ball well.
And I think that, you know, for a player like LeBron, I mean, the knock's always been, obviously, that he can't close in the fourth.
Right.
And also, we all can agree that LeBron's kind of a nice guy, and he's just that sort of facilitator-friendly, I want to get, you know, everybody involved, including Mario,
right,
one-armed bombers, and Shane can't move Battier, and James Jones, and, you know, these guys that I think a player who's incredibly offensively skilled, like maybe Kobe Bryant, wouldn't really get involved. LeBron's the kind of guy who really just wants to get everybody involved.
Right.
And I think if you're a Heat fan right now, you're really excited because D-Wade's, according to a lot of reports, D-Wade's been hurt. You know, he's got some serious knee issues going on.
He looks a little better tonight, 25-7-7.
He's been struggling a little bit. You know, tonight, like you said, he bounced back. But how encouraging is it that LeBron only had 3 assists? I mean, it sounds funny saying that, but... It's totally encouraging.
It
means that he's finally being the man offensively in the fourth quarter.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like he's finally.
Yeah, totally.
There's something in.
Absolutely.
And I really agree with Magic tonight. I was watching a replay on SportsCenter, and Magic said, "If the Heat win the finals, and I think that they probably are, they have to thank the Pacers in the second round."
Huh.
Because the Pacers came out,
sure,
you know, this young, cocky squad that know how to play the game. They're rugged, they're defensive, and they really pressed the Heat, you know, to a pretty far limit there. And it taught them about mental toughness. It gave LeBron a serious chip on his shoulder. It gave D Wade a chip on his shoulder. I mean, to be down 2-1 to the Pacers team that, as we all know, you know, as good as the Pacers are, I mean, they aren't on.
They're the Pacers. Yeah, they don't have the three of the top 10 players in the league, arguably, you know.
And if you look at the postseason as a whole, LeBron's been great, but I kind of agree with Magic. You know, when they were down 2-1 to the Pacers, and even down early in that game 4 in Indiana, and then D-Wade and LeBron had something crazy, like 38 straight points in the second half.
Yeah, they went off. Yeah,
it was like LeBron finally said, "Okay, I'm tired of the haters or the naysayers. I want to finally win one here." You know what I mean?
Well, and here's the thing: he's turned. I mean, he's been scoring 30 and getting, you know, 30 and 10 or something like that in a lot of games or close to it, in a lot of games in the postseason. But it hasn't always been. I guess I would say it hasn't always been the way that the Heat need him to be to win. Sometimes they just need him to take over. He gets a lot of little duck-ins for layups, which are what the Heat need, where everybody else doesn't have to work so hard, and the Heat still get baskets so that they can expend their energy defensively. And when he's making outside shots, and there was one sequence tonight when Miami missed a few shots, Wade got the rebound, Wade was kind of dribbling around, and he made kind of a dribble through the lane, kind of Steve Nash jump pass out to LeBron, for a wide-open three-pointer, and all LeBron had to do was stand there, shoot a three-pointer, make it, go back, and it was really an easy 3 points for LeBron. And when LeBron has to get his points in a difficult way, it's not as good. When he gets his points in an easier way, it sometimes means that he's not dominating the ball, he's not getting as many assists, but he's scoring more points, and I feel like that's when the Heat are a lot better team.
And you know what LeBron's finally doing? I mean, probably most of America and the world is going to go, thank God, finally he's doing this. But he's finally posting players. And
yeah, he's playing with his back to the basket, especially against Harden.
I mean, for a long time, people just scratched their heads. Like, this guy is a great perimeter player as far as taking guys off the dribble. But why? I mean, a guy who's this big, this strong, this gifted around the rim, why not take these smaller players?
Right.
And just bowl your way in and get fouled.
Well,
and if you notice, you know, just a real quick here, Kevin Durant has been getting in foul trouble, and that's been huge.
Yeah.
And I would argue to say that whether it's Durant or Harden playing him, I notice that sometimes Durant takes the challenge.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that when Durant takes the challenge, he picks the foul. Yeah. Because LeBron finally posting player. You know, yeah. You know, LeBron's got what 50 pounds under Durant.
Right.
And I mean, just I don't care how long Durant is, he can't guard LeBron down there.
Sure.
There's no way.
Sure. No, you're exactly yeah. right. And LeBron from the mid post, even he's got his, you know, his mid post game where he can face up a little bit too and get the one dribble and draw a post defender. Bosch had probably, you know, 4 or 6 free throws from that tonight. In a game that that they needed to have it, Bosch, Wade, and James were the only 3 players in double figures for the Heat. And another player who has been coming up really big the last few games is Battier. Bosch was in, you look at the plus-minus numbers, and it's really kind of funny. I enjoy looking at plus-minus after the game and seeing how much it either matches or doesn't match what my perception was of how good that player played. For Bosch, he was a -7 tonight, and Shane Battier was a +11. And so, not to say that Battier is better than Bosch, because that's not certainly the case, but there's an argument to be made that, you know, the intangibles that Battier brings really helps guys like LeBron, and maybe Battier has finally figured out how to play with LeBron and Wade, and how and where to pick his spots. He was 2 for 2 from 3-point range, 9 points, 2 or 2 from the field. So the only 2 field goals he took were 3s, 3 for 3 from the free throw line, 3 rebounds, no assists. So he's not creating 1 steal, no turnovers, and 3 fouls. I mean, it's a very small line, but a guy like Battier, I feel like in a series like this, you know, you talk about the Ibakas and even the Hardens of the world. A guy like Battier dropping in 9 points super efficiently and playing decent defense on Harden or whoever else he's guarding makes a big difference for a guy like LeBron.
No, I mean, Shane Battier reminded me sort of that similar role that like a guy like Robert Horry played with the Lakers.
Or Fox,
Fox during those 3 championships, you know, just a guy who plays obviously, you know, obviously he's a better defender than those 2 guys, but a guy who plays phenomenal defense, and then
Fox is a very good defender.
He's really been hitting the open 3 too. I mean, I saw a stat tonight. He's like 11 of 15 from the floor in the first 3 games, and most of those are, you know, 3-point attempts.
Right.
So I mean, the guy is getting the lights out right now, you know, it's interesting because once again it proves that, you know, these are all professionals. These are all guys who, a lot of them, you know, were great or fairly great talent in college or high school.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to get caught up with the big 3 and you know, anywhere, the big 3 in Oklahoma City, the big 3 in Miami or Boston or wherever, and we always forget these role guys. And you know, it's silly because I think it was Tim Legler who just sort of casually brought up the point on, I think it was First Take a couple of days ago. One of the 2 guys on First Take were sort of laughing off the idea that Shane Battier was sort of like this guy who could make kind of like almost make or break the finals. And I think Legler was on, and one of those guys, and they were like, "Hey, do we remember that this guy was a National Player of the Year award winner in 2001?
Right, he was a Wooden Award winner for sure.
I mean, Shane Battier,
and he was a 4 in college. I mean, he was a 4 who could shoot a 3 from time to time. But he's changed his game in the pros. I'm really interested in guys like him who can come into the pros after being really good in college a certain way. Like Durant was always the player that he is. In college, he was shooting 3s. He was shooting 3s in the NBA. You know, he used his length. Right. But a player like Westbrook, for instance, who I feel like has gotten a lot better since he's been in the NBA, a guy like Battier, who has developed that game since he's been in the NBA. Those are guys that I really enjoy seeing develop, and that's why the college game is appealing to a lot of people, because you see these guys that get tangibly better every year, whereas in the NBA, too often, you see a guy who doesn't tangibly get any better. There's no new skills, there's no new moves, and that's something that you see from the greats, you know, the LeBrons, the Kobes, sometimes even the Wades. You know, you'll see a new move here and there. Tell me, and this is, you know, we do talk about Battier, and I know I was the one that brought him up, but I still believe that, and maybe eventually, or maybe you do agree with me on this, that the players are the team with the most really, really good players wins. And that being said, that's why I picked Miami. I really feel like LeBron is talent-wise that much better than everybody else. I just, you know, needed him to pick it up as far as his brain goes. And Wade and Bosh, you know, that's the big three. People coming into this series after game one were really down on Miami, and oh man, can Miami even make the finals during the Eastern Conference finals? And my point was, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, and I wrote about this on the site, there's pandemonium about this team. People thought that, you know, wondered if this team could go 80-2 with these three guys. I mean, that's how good their talent was and still is. I mean, Wade's a little bit hurt and Bosh is hurt too, but those guys were coming back from injuries, not getting more injured. And we forget the kinds of, you know, crazy hyperbole that was thrown out when these guys all got together. I mean, in a lot of ways, this was always their year. You know, they had to go through a year of heartbreak. And that being said, it's just how the NBA works. Oklahoma City looked so great, and yet it's just not their year this year. You know, I think they're going to be maybe a team that contends with Miami for the next few years, but I just, it's 2-1. I'm not putting a, you know, nail in Oklahoma City's coffin, but this is why I picked Miami.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna exclude Bosh, and I know that some people would say I'm crazy, but not saying that, but because I think he's not a difference maker. I mean, obviously he is. He had a couple big blocks tonight, but there's a lot of Boshes, I think, who come into the league, but there aren't a lot of Dwayne Wade and LeBron James.
Correct.
I mean,
yeah, I'll agree with that.
Those two guys are game changers. I mean, Dwayne Wade's been playing hurt, and you're right. I mean, he bounced back tonight. I saw some previews in the fourth quarter, and God, he had a couple of beautiful plays in the third. And I mean, that guy is beyond Hall of Fame bound. I mean, he's one of the greats, you know.
Yeah.
And because you just watch him play, I mean, it's beyond even his skill set. It's something about him. It's like an elevation to his game. And then LeBron seems to have finally turned a corner this year, like we're talking about. And he could be one of those greats, you know. So definitely. I mean, it's really weird. It's sort of like what happened to the Sacramento Kings about 10 years ago.
Well, I was going to say that. Yeah, I mean, I was going to liken it to them, but they weren't. I mean, they had Weber and Peja, but those guys weren't. LeBron and Dwayne.
I was going to use them as comparison to, like, sort of talking about with the Thunder. I mean, the Thunder have Durant. Obviously, there was no Durant on those Kings teams.
Right.
But. I mean, Westbrook's a freak, but really, I mean, you watch the guy shoot, he's not really a shooter, and for a couple of years, you know, he's pretty special. I mean, I know it sounds funny, but
he's
been special for a couple of years, and Peja was coming off the bench and knocking stuff down, and Hito was there for a couple of years, and he was coming off the bench, and they had Bobby Jackson. I mean, that team was really...
All those players they all peaked at the same time in their career. Like, only Chris Webber was really a superstar, but all those guys played the best basketball of their lives right at the same time, which made the Kings kind of fun to watch that way.
So it's sort of like you were saying, you could see the Thunder competing for a few years, and I totally agree. And I just hope that they can somehow concoct at least a championship out of this team. But like you said,
yeah, you'd hope.
It's, you know, only one guy wins, and 10 years ago it was that Laker dynasty, and the Sacramento Kings, no matter what they could do, just could not quite ever.
Well, and I think the thing that bodes well for the Thunder is that you know, they're in a different division than the Heat, and I think different conference than the Heat, and I think a lot of the East Coast is going to gain better players over the next few years. They've been really down the last year or two, I feel like, as a conference. And you see teams like Indiana that are up and coming. I think the East Coast gets better and kind of evens the score. I mean, since Jordan left the Bulls, the West Coast has been pretty dominant, both in terms of championships and I think in terms of talent too. I don't think people would argue with that. But I think the next 5 years or so here, I think talent's going to start to move east as well. All right, I think you and I both agree that LeBron in his prime is better than Durant in his prime, although Durant's, that's like saying that, like, Da Vinci is better than, you know, the next amazing artist and inventor, right? So let's look at the second best player on each team. Dwayne Wade in his prime or Russell Westbrook in what has been or will be his prime?
Oh, no. There will never be a comparison. I mean, as good as I think Russell Westbrook is going to be,
Think he's still going to get a lot better?
No, I don't. What you see now is what you're going to get with Westbrook. I think Westbrook's going to be a dynamic, you know, high flying scorer. He's never going to be the guy who's going to really find his teammates. I just don't think that about, you know, I think I've said this on a couple podcasts. You know, Westbrook's a natural two guard. I mean, he's not a point guard.
Yeah, he's 6'4", so he's not small. There was a moment tonight with Westbrook where he, James or somebody on Miami hit a three, maybe Battier, and there was like 5 seconds left in the quarter when Battier hit the three, and Westbrook came down and it took him about 3 seconds to hit a three himself, and it was this this moment where Miami had just gone up by six right before the quarter, and Westbrook hits a three to only make the lead, you know, to cut the lead to three, and you say to yourself, you know, this guy's got to have some kind of confidence, some kind of, you know, mental acuity to be able to do that, and at the same time, you know, it's kind of like the opposite of the LeBron issue. Uh-huh. It's can he facilitate? Can he get, he took 18 shots and Durant took 19. Westbrook was 8 of 18 for 19 points, and Durant, they were both 1 for 4 from three-point range, and Durant was 11 for 19. So, you know, they're taking similar numbers of shots, and I didn't see Westbrook get into the paint as much as he needs to. And he's kind of like Rose that way, I feel like, where his, although I would take Westbrook's jump shot over Rose's, when you talk about Westbrook, I think he's still got some place to go, and I think he's proven that he can get better even after being in the NBA, and that's actually a skill into itself.
Yeah, I think the knock on Westbrook right now is fair. I mean, he's erratic. He's incredibly dynamic. It's just kind of what you see is what you get. I mean, I think Westbrook, and I think you're right. I think Westbrook already has one up LeBron, although not now. LeBron's got like we're talking about, LeBron's got to go on. It seems like now, but Westbrook seems to always have a chip on his shoulder.
And he looked at everybody, and he did his little like almost, guns in the holster thing.
But that's almost his greatest demon. I mean, it's great to play with a chip on your shoulder, but how can you go like stretches of a game? I mean, I'll watch quarters with a Thunder, and Durant touches the ball once in like 6 minutes.
Yeah,
I mean.
We're talking
Kevin Durant.
This is why the Derek Fisher thing. Yeah, so this is why the Derek Fisher addition really intrigues me too, because you know Fisher, like I guess Ron Harper probably did for him. I feel like Fisher can also get to the point where he can mentor Westbrook a little bit at some level. Fisher, you know, plays a lot of minutes for them, more minutes than he would probably play for a lot of other teams. Because of their lack of a backup. I mean, Daquan Cook is not, a world beater exactly, a backup point guard. But Fisher, he had 9 points on 3 of 8 from the field. He shoots up some random weird shots too, though, and especially early in his career, was prone to kind of drive the lane when he shouldn't. Never had the athleticism or height of Westbrook, obviously. But I feel like having Fisher around is another reason why Westbrook might get a little bit better, I think, over the next couple of years.
I would take Wade with like a quarter of a knee over Westbrook. I just think Wade's like, I think we can all agree, Dwayne Wade's just, even though he's having an off postseason,
It's proven. I mean, it's the proven versus what the could be. I guess it's a similar to me.
Can you really see Westbrook having a 9-year career like Dwayne Wade's had so far?
Well, Westbrook's in his fourth year, I think, and the last three have been, you know, 22,
he's had a really
22
good
points a game.
He had a really good year this year, and this year, you know, he finally was scoring in more bulk, but I just...
His points per game in his career, since we're there and since I have the internet, this is his fourth year. He went from 15 to 16 to 21 to 23. His assists have gone kind of all over the place between 5 and 8. Mm-hmm. His rebounds have stayed steady around 5 rebounds a game. You know, 23, 5 assists or 6 assists and 5 rebounds, it's not bad. And you're right, it's more of a combo guard than a point guard situation.
If you're looking at your team now and you're building a team, I mean, it's like Dwayne Wade's already proven and you've done it once. And,
we're going to have to see. I feel like my argument for Westbrook is potentially at least has some similarities to your argument for LeBron over Kobe, for instance, in that LeBron's kind of hasn't done it yet, but all the indicators are that he will. I feel like Westbrook, in a similar way, hasn't done it yet, but the team that he's on and...
Oh, wow, you actually feel that strongly about Westbrook?
I think, yes, I do. Because he's changed himself. He's changed his game. He changed his game at UCLA. He changed his game. He made himself into the point guard they needed him to be. And at Oklahoma City, he's adjusted to what they need, and he's become a much better shooter, and he will continue to do so. Derek Fisher, his first 5 years in the league, was not a very good shooter. He's become a lot better shooter because he's practiced, and the same with Westbrook, I think, will happen. He's strong enough to make that work, and his shot's structurally solid enough to make that happen.
Yeah, and I can totally respect that. I think when it comes to point guards, we all can agree it's sort of like going to an ice cream parlor and picking your flavor,
Favorite flavor, right.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been sort of, I just seem to lean a little more on that old school kind of throwback, Rajon Rondo, Steve Nash.
Sure.
You know, these guys who really facilitate and play the whole game.
Sure.
But, you know, when they have to, because they're pretty skilled, have learned how to take over offensively in certain stretches, you know?
Right.
And that's just sort of the flavor I bend on. So possibly I could be naturally a little harsher on a guy like a Wick. But I totally agree. I mean, he has a phenomenal talent. And I mean, God, he's, talk about, you know, versatile. I mean, dude, the guy's a lightning worm.
So, yeah, absolutely. So before the series started, who did you have? What was your prediction? Honestly, before the series started. Don't tell me, Miami in 6 or something like that. Maybe it was Miami in 6. That was my prediction, actually.
You know what? I picked Miami to be the year, but I've always been one of those guys who tries not to be one of those critics who has too much pride to admit when I'm wrong. You know what? I really, and I know it's going to sound lame, but I really just sort of tossed a coin up. It really was a toss up this year. I was really like, God, I mean, the Thunder are playing so phenomenal, and Kevin Durant have just transcended himself on a level that's George Gervin-esque, and LeBron's playing well, but D-Wade's hurt, but LeBron. So it was sort of, to me, it was like a toss-up.
Mm-hmm.
I could admit, though, personally, without sort of trying to assess the game outside of my personal feelings, I mean, I personally would like to see LeBron win one, and I'll tell you why, because I would like all of us to finally shut up about it.
I would love to shut up about it myself.
It's not even the people who have criticized him. It's even the people who like him.
Right.
I want everyone just to shut up about it and just let the guy be a great player. He's finally won one. Okay, we can all stop talking about it now. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, like, absolutely. I feel the same way, and it's kind of why I'm rooting for Miami. I don't know how I got that turned around like that, but the idea is that when you see a great player, and your arguments throughout this season, especially the postseason, have kind of got to me at some level, because the idea is, yes, he's a great player. The reason why it was frustrating, and I kind of pinpointed this a couple weeks ago, the reason why it was so frustrating to me, Luke, is because the guy is so talented. How does he not win with that talent? How does he not find a way to translate that talent into everything his team needs to win? I'm not saying he has to win games single-handedly. I'm saying that he was so talented, but it so wasn't translating at some level in some of those games. Even the early Boston series, it just wasn't translating over for me. And maybe it was because his teammates weren't healthy or
yeah,
that good. Sure. I mean,
yeah.
it makes a difference. But my point is that, and my point that I wrote in the article about, you know, not feeling bad for LeBron, is that the reason why Miami is not a deep team is because they have three of the best freaking players in the world, and that's the roll of the dice that you make when you sign those guys. If one of them gets hurt, then that's what happens. That's how they chose to construct their team. So I'm not going to feel bad for them because that's the chance they took, and that's how
it
worked out.
Why would we feel bad for any pro athlete? I don't care. They're making millions of dollars to play a sport.
But that's what I'm saying.
So when I see
Stephen A. Smith, I have pity for. No, I don't have pity for them. Come on.
That blew my mind. I think that we have to sort of try to look at a guy like LeBron James. We have to try. I think it's really hard. We have to try to look at him as objectively as possible.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
Because I think sometimes, and I could be wrong to a level, but I think I'm probably right in some ways here, but I think sometimes the naysayers when it comes to LeBron, it's sort of like the president of the United States of America. It's like if something goes wrong, it's the president's fault. You know what I mean?
Sure.
When there's the House and the Senate and the state government and the local government,
whether the president
so
actually has control over the economy, he gets blamed for the economy.
I think,
right.
But look, I don't feel bad for him. Like I don't feel bad for Kobe or Kevin Durant or any
right.
great player.
Sure.
Played.
Sure.
And why? When you're a superstar, it's a blessing and a curse, man. The
right.
blessing is you're gifted with that talent,
yeah.
and you are the face of the NBA.
Yeah.
The curse is like the president.
Yep.
If your team goes down, no
yep.
matter how you put it,
yep.
you are almost like to blame. I mean,
yep.
And so I think that there's probably part of that involved when it comes to LeBron, because, and maybe that's why I've taken that the other side of the argument when I try to look at LeBron objectively. It's like, I don't know. I don't want to do that. I want to try not to do that when it comes to him. Just I want him just to be a great player as he is, kind of a thing.
Right.
Because if you look at the postseason, like you said, to you it wasn't translating because they weren't winning games in the early going with the
sure.
in the box.
Right.
Come on, man. I mean, look at the guy's postseason. It's been otherworldly. I mean, that is the phrase I can think of. It is
yeah.
otherworldly.
And if he wins the championship, he will get the credit that he deserves. I do believe that. As we kind of wrap up here, I want to talk really quickly about next weekend. Next weekend's a big fansmanship excursion. We're going to go two games in one day. We're going to go see the My Dodgers and Luke's Halos in Anaheim. Which what part of Los Angeles is Anaheim in? I'm not sure. We're going to go see the Angels and the Dodgers, and that's the early game. And then we're going to head over to Carson and the Home Depot Center and see the Galaxy.
Right.
Hopefully some of the international players will be back. They've had a lot
Is
of guys.
Complaint?
They've had a lot of guys out for injury or for international play or for suspension.
Is Beckham hurt?
I don't know if Beckham's hurt. I hope not. It would be cool to have him play and Landon Donovan maybe back from the international playing, but it's World Cup qualifying time too, and the MLS is one of the leagues that has, you know, some major games going on during this time, and so it's kind of a curse to have really good players on your team this time of the year, because those really great players are usually playing for their national team. So we'll see who's back and who isn't. But the Galaxy and radio play-by-play man Joe Tatino, who I hope to get on a podcast at some point, will say hi to Joe and head up the Home Depot Center. I think it'll be the first MLS game for any of us. There's,
Absolutely.
Of course, the MLS game they play at Cal Poly every year. This year, I think it's like the Earthquakes and the Rapids usually. I guess this is considered a San Jose area maybe for MLS purposes. But you know, San Luis Obispo, it's always kind of split between the Bay Area and LA, and I'm sure there's Galaxy fans as much as there are Earthquake fans here. So I'm excited to go see the Galaxy, and it should be a good road trip, and we'll be sure to take some pictures. What are you excited about, Luke, as far as the day?
You know what, man? Man, I don't know what's happening to me. I think it's probably marriage, but because I've even seen like a character change when it comes to our webpage and our writing and everything, but man, I'm just getting so friendly and calm and buddy-buddy with... I mean, I even like Kobe now. It's weird, you know? But you know what? I really don't care.
Come to the dark side.
I don't even care if the Halos win the damn game. I mean, I know it sounds like the worst thing a diehard Angel fan could say, but
yeah.
I really don't. Yeah. I just look forward to hanging out with two, you know, really good friends and having a beer and watching a ball game. You know, just the whole experience, and then just watching, you know, two teams that all three of us love, and just enjoying that. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. I was in LA last night with my family, and we saw the Dodgers and the White Sox, and the Dodgers lost by a run, and the last five innings didn't have a run in it. It was, you know, by all intents and purposes, you know, the game was over in the fourth inning, but I was there with my dad and my brother and sister and their family, and my grandma was there even. And so, yeah, I mean, it wasn't as much about whether the Dodgers win. I used to keep track of what percentage of the games I ever went to the Dodgers won. And for a while, it was like, I was like 10-1 in Dodger home games the Dodgers had actually won. So they used to win for me. And now it's like in my later years, they're evening out the score for me. They've lost most of the time when I go down recently, but that's just, I guess it's the way it goes. But when you live 3.5 hours away from the stadium, it's got to be an event. So next Saturday will be an event, and I'm sure we'll have something written about it, and we'll have some pictures too. Final thoughts, Luke?
Yeah, final thoughts. The reason that you should never count wins and losses when you go to your favorite team's games is because, perfect example, perfect a reason why you never should is 2 years ago, I went with my father-in-law to a Giants game. He's a big-time Giants fan.
Uh-huh.
And it was Randy Johnson was actually pitching that year. He signed a one-year deal, and he actually had a pretty good going-out party that year for the Giants. But anyways, Randy was on the mound, so I was pretty excited to see Randy Johnson,
sure.
Even though he was, like, 52.
Sure.
And Randy was pitching a great game. It was 0-0, like, going into the seventh or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And some, like, random relief pitcher for the Brewers jacks a two-run home run, like, 308 feet to left field.
Like, down the line? Like, just barely making it to the foul pole?
And the Brewers win the game 2-0 and have, like, two runs on, like, three hits.
Yep.
And the Giants had, like, no runs on four.
Yep.
I just stared at my father and I was like, dude, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I mean...
You're like, at least you got to see Randy Johnson pitch.
Exactly.
Yeah. I had a similar game in Tampa Bay my first summer that I lived in Florida. I went and saw Tampa Bay play the Yankees. And, of course, when you see Tampa Bay play the Yankees in Florida, it's got, you know, there's probably 75% Yankees fans. And this, what was his name? Damon something, I want to say, was a third baseman for the Rays at the time. And he hit this monster home run off the foul pole in Tropicana. And I was rooting against the Yankees, of course, because that's what I had to do. But it was this weird thing where the home team hit this monster homer in, like, the, you know, sixth inning and to go ahead. And the place was mostly quiet. And so, yeah, I mean, I get to say I saw Clemens pitch, right? And that's historical, even if he is... even if he is at trial right now. And there's some really good stuff on the internet about that. But we won't take too long. Luke, it's been fun on our one of our first phone call podcasts that actually works, and we'll do many more to come. And looking forward to next weekend.
All right, bro. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Take care.